Welcome back to the All Flesh Podcast, NoShip Network's coverage of Hulu's television series, The Handmaid's Tale. I am your host, Em.
And I am your host, Steve.
Tonight, we are reading your feedback discussing Season 2, Episode 13, the season finale, The Word. Before we start reading, I just want to let everybody know that I am now watching The West Wing, because some of you wrote in about this. Thank you guys for pushing me toward it, because I'm already really enjoying that show. Also, I did start reading John Krakauer's Under the Banner of Heaven. I can't remember who it was that suggested it. I do recommend those of you that are interested in looking at real-world analogous societies that are similar to the society that formed Gilead. It has already demonstrated remarkable similarities, and I'm not even a quarter through.
All right, so first piece of feedback tonight is from Larissa. She says, "Hey, Em and Steve, hope you guys are okay because I'm a total wreck after this finale. What an amazing episode. I couldn't take my eyes off the screen. The scene between Serena and June at the beginning was quite unsettling. Great acting as always. It's notorious how June behaves during this episode. It was like she was done pretending, done playing this role that Gilead forces her to. She was speaking to Serena, not Mrs. Waterford, appealing to her true self, not the character that she has to play. She shows Eden's Bible to Serena, and Serena starts talking about, quote, sins. It was ridiculous, even for her brainwashed mind to say that. I mean, there's no logic in this. How could reading the Bible be a sin? There's no sense in this rule whatsoever, and she knows it. June said all the right things, and Serena couldn't deny the truth. I laughed out loud when June asked Serena if she was going to protect Holly by locking her up in the greenhouse as an orchid. Serena didn't even have arguments to discuss. She just tells June to get out. Again." When June sees that Eden's father turned her in, she's really good at shoving her feelings down, because I wanted to beat the hell out of that fanatic, heartless asshole. Oh, but not for long. What a pleasure it was to see June hitting Fred back. Yes, queen, finally. Later, we got that sweet scene of June, Nick, and Holly. So beautiful. A rare moment of peace and love in the middle of this whole mess. And something unexpected. Serena and the other wives chose to support an idea that was against the rules, in quotations. I was really surprised by that. When they reunited to speak out in front of the commanders, I had goosebumps, and it reminded me of a passage in the Bible, Psalm 68:11, that says, "The women are a large army." In that scene, I felt like war was brewing between the wives and the commanders. I don't know if they will stand up after what the bastards did to Serena, but I hope that they do. So the revolution would come from inside and out. Afterwards, we got the "What are you doing, Emily?" scene. I screamed out loud. It took me a while to realize that she really did it. She stabbed Aunt Lydia on the back. She really ran out of fucks to give, and I don't blame her. Fred is such a hypocrite bastard. Speaking of bending the rules for his own advantage, when he just let his wife have a finger cut off because of those same rules. Fuck you. June is not for sale. Then finally, Serena does something right and chooses someone's needs before hers. She let June take the baby because she knows it's the only way to keep her safe, which makes me think that she'll do some good next season, now that she has nothing to lose. I don't believe that's enough to redeem her for what she did to June throughout. I don't know if June forgave her in that moment, but I think she doesn't hate her as much. Meanwhile, Nick is basically threatening Fred with a gun. I wonder what consequences there will be for him. I think there was a scene with him in the trailer that didn't happen. He was crying or something like that. Also, thank you, Rita. You're an angel. By the end of the episode, the commander that was with Emily helps them escape, which felt really weird and out of place since we know nothing about him. Was he introduced randomly just for that? Will he have a greater purpose next season? It felt off, even though it was obfuscated by the fact that Emily and Holly, aka Nicole, are free now. But June stayed. She decided to. I kind of figured out she was going to do that for Hannah. What will happen now? Will she go back to the Waterfords' house? Will Fred be used as a puppet by June, Serena, Nick, and Rita? Too many questions. It was an intense journey. Thank you guys for your amazing podcasts. You rock. Till next season. P.S. Have you guys watched Killing Eve? It's also a great show. I think you'll love it.
I haven't seen that.
I don't think I've heard of it.
I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it. Yeah, what you said about Serena, how ridiculous it was that she's asserting that even reading the Bible is a sin. I think she realized or became uncomfortable at that moment, and she wasn't dealing with it very well. That's why she told June to get out. But that just shows that the role that she's meant to play is ridiculous, and she's realizing it as time moves on. Unfortunately, it's a very slow realization for Serena, with fits and starts all season. And then, you know, Fred, with his hypocrisy that you mentioned, you know, obviously for him, roles are or dictated as a way of control. Roles are not meant for him.
Yeah, definitely. You bring up a great point and really hit the nail on the head, Larissa, when you say that here is a man who just let the rules of Gilead mutilate his wife, but he's willing to bend the rules for a handmaid. So, I mean, he is obsessed with her. He's smitten with her. I mean, I wouldn't say he's in love with her because he doesn't know her on that level. He doesn't deserve to be in love with her. He hasn't done anything to even feel that. But I think in his mind, there's something akin to that going on. So I think that's what is just really playing through his mind. It's just selfishness. It's complete selfishness. But when you juxtapose those two things right there, like they did, it really brings it to light.
Thank you, Larissa.
Thank you.
All right. Up next, we have Gabe. And Gabe says, hey, guys, first off, thanks for your podcast. My wife and I love listening to the episode breakdowns and your take on what's happening. Sorry for the long email here, but I feel like June's decision in the end has been very polarizing with the audience, and I just had to weigh in. I understand people's frustration with June not leaving. I really do. And I think that had Emily not been there, she should have and would have left. If you have the chance to get one of your children out, you do it. But if you have someone you trust that can get her out for you, and you have a chance to get your other child, you do it. As a parent, you have to make that call. You cannot just give up on your other child. I would love to see a poll taken asking people if they think she made the right decision or not, and then ask the respondents if they are parents or not. I suspect most parents would agree with what June did. Sure, as people say, Hannah seems to be in a good house. But to what end? When she turns 15, she'll become a child bride. She'll never be able to read or enjoy any freedoms. She'll be raised to be obedient to men, plain and simple. We even saw that Eden was raised in a loving family, but they're the ones who turned her in for simply being in love. Others saying she could coordinate a rescue for Hannah from Canada. Really? How is that? Because we've seen how unsuccessful and impotent Luke and Moira have been with their attempts to get June and Hannah. U.S. refugees in Canada are completely powerless. So she stays and tries to get Hannah. Not sure how, but that's what the writers are for. And honestly, where would the show go from here if both June and Emily were in Canada next year? Pretty boring, in my opinion. Again, thanks for the podcast. Looking forward to next season. Cheers. Thanks, Gabe. Yeah, great point to bring up about Hannah. Yes, it does seem like she's in a loving family, just like Eden was, apparently. But because of the rules and the social pressures, if Hannah were to step out of line, which, you know, teenagers do, it could be fatal for her. And plus, she's going to be leading a life that she would not choose for herself.
Okay, I can see this both ways because I think you're absolutely right. If you did take a poll and say how many people thought that June should stay to try to fight for her other child, Hannah, most of the people who said yes would probably be parents, I would imagine. I think that's completely correct. But at the same time, you know, when you say others saying that she could coordinate a rescue from Canada, really, how would they do that? I agree with that too. It seems implausible. Like, how would that actually get done? So to me, I think how this situation moves forward at all is predicated upon what state June is in and what she's actually doing at the beginning of next season. Because if she's part of some sort of underground resistance thing, then she has a chance. If she's not, then she's even more impotent than she would be in Canada. So then staying back, she just denied herself her freedom for nothing, because going back to being a handmaid, she can't do anything to save Hannah.
Well, I think the whole point of depicting Eden's father coming to talk to Commander Waterford and learning that he turned Eden in was meant to kind of give us an idea or plant something within June that informed us as viewers why she made her decision later, that it became more urgent for her to try to rescue Hannah out of this situation. So I think she needed to get herself in a position to where it was more feasible for her to rescue Hannah. And I don't think she thinks going to Canada is that answer.
Yeah, I see that. I see what you're saying. I mean, I feel the same way. I feel like that scene was there for that, too. So it just all boils down to the question of, like, what agency does June grab a hold of? Like, in what form does it come? Because like we keep pointing out, or I keep pointing out at least over and over, like a broken record, if she's a handmaid, there's no dice on this at all. So we just have to wait and see. But I mean, I see why she did it, even though I was shocked when she did it and disappointed that she did it, because you know she gets out eventually and you were hoping it was going to be now. And it started to feel like Lucy and Charlie Brown with the football thing. So
thank you for giving us your point of view, Gabe.
Thank you. All right. Up next is Maria. Maria says, Hello, I really enjoy listening to your podcast on The Handmaid's Tale every week. I'm sad this season is over. I had a few thoughts to share on the series finale. As much as the writers slash showrunners talk about how this season's theme is motherhood, I think another clear theme is toxic masculinity. The most blatant example of this is the transformation of Fred from a husband who at the very least respected his wife to one that now flat out despises her and takes any opportunity to humiliate and subjugate her. The flashbacks to the quote time before show a deep love and respect within the Waterford marriage. Fred used to see Serena as his equal, and even if her intellectual superiority made him feel insecure, he never acted on it as he has this season. For example, beating her, ignoring her, letting Gilead take her finger. The other men also show signs of toxic masculinity, particularly Nick and Luke, who visibly suppress their emotions and whose stoicism the writers want us to interpret as coping mechanisms for all the tragedy in their lives. This is the quintessential boys don't cry stereotype. Lastly, Isaac is basically a caricature of a male chauvinist both in his treatment of the handmaids June and Janine and his relationship with Eden. I find it hard to believe that Serena would give up Nicole so easily. I get that she just lost a finger and has become wholeheartedly disillusioned with Gilead, but she was willing to rape and kill for this baby just two episodes ago. She chose not to defect when given the chance in Canada. Will she try to in season three? Seriously, though, what else does she have to live for in Gilead if the only thing she ever wanted is now gone? The map of Gilead Fred is looking at during the episode looks like it has changed to show more parts of the former U.S. in open rebellion. Is it possible we will see this as a part of the storyline next season? How will Commander Lawrence deal with the fallout of a stabbed and beaten Aunt Lydia and a runaway handmaid? How high up in the Gilead chain do you have to be to suffer no consequences for something like that? I do hope they bring Bradley Whitford back next season. I really enjoyed his character, and I'm super curious to see how he resolves the Emily Lydia situation. Thanks again for the podcast. I look forward to listening again next season. Best, Maria.
Well, as I said on our coverage for the finale episode last week, Bradley Whitford will be back for season three, which I found this out by reading an interview with Bruce Miller, and he and June will encounter each other frequently. I'm not sure how or if she's going to move in with him or what. We'll see.
I know that the whole stoicism thing goes along with an inability. When you feel helpless, when you feel like you can't do anything in your current situation to enact the change that you want to see, it sort of breeds this, you use the word stoicism, and that fits perfectly like a puzzle piece for it. It's the perfect word for it, because you just feel as though, okay, well, I can't do anything about it, so I just have to endure. And you don't usually get the same displays from men, you know, who are being quote unquote manly men, and they're not going to cry. They're not going to, or at least not in front of anybody else. And they're not going to do certain things that would indicate to you clearly on an emotional level that you could read on their face or listen to in their words that they're feeling a certain way. They're just kind of going to clam up and be quiet. And it's honestly not the best way to deal with the situation, but it's kind of like a default for certain males, I guess is the best way to say it. But, you know, it is really cool that you pointed out this stuff, because I didn't think of it, because, you know, this whole society is based around toxic masculinity filtered through a righteousness in a religious sense. So to look at more subtle elements of that is really good. I also wanted to talk about the map of Gilead that Fred's looking at. And I hope you're right. And I think you're right, too, that I think we're going to see some of the parts of what used to be America or now de facto parts of Gilead in open rebellion. And this is possibly where June could operate from or something along those lines. But I also like that idea that you kicked around, Em, about her being in Lawrence's house, possibly. That's the only way that would really work, I think, if you put her back into that particular district and she wasn't on the run. Well, thank you, Maria.
Yes, thank you, Maria. I kind of doubt that will happen, though, because that would be too easy, maybe.
It feels like it would be. Yeah, it feels like it would be. But I'm just trying to find ways in which I'd be comfortable with them as a viewer, still buying in and still having my suspension of disbelief with the character of June, not just in Gilead, but in that district. So, and interacting with the characters that we already know.
All right, up next, we have Jessica, also known as Benny Jessica. She's a frequent contributor to our Vikings podcast, and she wrote in quite a bit for our season one coverage of The Handmaid's Tale. And she says, "Hello, no shippers. I live in Scandinavia, so I live in one of the best places on earth for women, but still men make more money. The Me Too movement is huge here, and we have never had a woman prime minister. The Nationalist Party will probably be the second largest party, if not the largest, after the elections this fall. The main thing they are campaigning on is to control immigration, but when you look closer at their policies, controlling abortion rights is on their agenda too. So first the immigrants, and then the women and the gays. The Me Too movement has been great, but the more women speak up, the more it seems like we are getting a backlash. The world is a strange place right now, and your orange blob is not helping. Tell us about it, especially after this week.
Yeah, let us know how much he's not helping, because I don't get reminded nearly enough.
Anyway, so Benny Jessica goes on to say, Season 3, the Spice Girls start spreading girl power. There, the handmaids, the wives, the Marthas, and the women will finally unite against that real enemy of all women in all times of history. Men. Obsessive, controlling, insecure men. But like in real life, we can't do it ourselves. We need the good guys, like Rory Gilmore's professor on our side. Hope to see more of him. My favorite girl, Serena, who has been cray-cray with baby fever, has finally seen the light. I've been waiting for this all season. You do not want to be Commander Fuckboy when she comes for payback. June. You go save Hannah and Nick. We are rooting for Nick in the love triangle, right? Luke is so lame. I'm excited for season 3. I thought I would not be okay with June still in Gilead, but I am. I'm ready for the battle of the sexes, and since this is fiction, the odds for the women are much better than they have ever been before, but hopefully we will get there in real life too. Even though I fear a backlash, great things are happening in the world. Like the Harvey Weinsteins being brought to light and Saudi women can finally drive. This is the first time I write to you this season, but I've been listening to you all season. A huge thanks to everyone in this great community, especially to you, Em and Steve, for making the podcast help me sound incredibly smart in all the Handmaid's Tale conversations I have with friends. People are really impressed by my insights, and I gloat, not telling them I have a whole crew helping me. So thank you to everyone. I will fess up eventually and spread the word of No Ship. I'm just taking a moment. Or season to shine. Blessed be the Fruit Loops, Jess. Thank you, Penny Jessica.
Feel free to use us without crediting it. Just have fun with it.
Yeah, you don't have to credit us.
Yeah, our orange blob is not helping things at all. And although I don't feel like we're in a position to apologize for that because we didn't vote for him, and that's none of my doing. We can't. Unfortunately, we're dealing with a lot of people who like the orange blob. This country, and hopefully that number goes down in the future, but we'll see. So who are we rooting for in the love triangle? Is it Luke or is it Nick?
That is such a good question. I don't know. First season, Nick drove me crazy. And he hasn't always been a winner this season, in my opinion, either, but he is the most familiar.
Yeah, we've spent so much more time with Nick that it feels like it's a de facto position to kind of be. But I think people are probably split in their minds to where they're going, well, if June's in Gilead, then I'm comfortable with her being with Nick. But once she gets out back into the real world, she needs to be with Luke because they were married. They have a kid together, et cetera, et cetera. So that's going to be, I think, whatever, if Nick survives, whatever dramatic tension can be drawn from that triangle is going to be squeezed for every drop that we can get. I don't have an answer, though, because I like both of them. I don't think Luke is lame, but I would say that I like Nick just a little bit more, and I can't tell if it's the familiarity or if it's something else. All right. Thank you, Benny Jessica. Good luck with your election this November, and wish us good luck with our election this November. Okay. Up next is Anna. Anna says, hi, guys. First time giving feedback from here in New Zealand. I'm a new mom and have been watching Handmaid's Tale while on maternity leave. Suffice to say, a few of the episodes have struck a bit too close to home, and there have been a lot of tears. I just finished watching the season finale for the second time. At the end of the first time I watched it, I was too clouded by frustration that, again, June didn't leave Gilead. What was she thinking? But after the second round, I have a bit more empathy for her decision and the fact that she had a situation where she could leave Nicole safely with someone else, Emily. It looks as though she also saw an opening with Commander Lawrence that perhaps in season 3, she will hole up with him for a while and plan some epic underground attack. But always, back to the episode. My favorite part was definitely all the Marthas coming together, starting with Rita's total stare down of Commander Waterford. I love seeing this crew of women finally kick some arse. As we saw in an earlier episode, the Marthas are made up of some pretty smart women, i.e. the pediatric specialist, and they are probably, other than Econowives, the lowest of the classes in Gilead. I think they will play a bigger role in season 3. Fingers crossed. Serena is still one of the best characters of this season, in my opinion. I do wonder why the rape scene a few episodes back needed to have Serena leading it. Did we need a total juxtaposition of that scene against the scene of her saying goodbye to baby Nicole? She was non-redeemable to me after the rape episode, and thus the finger cutting off and the emotional goodbye to baby Nicole weren't as powerful as they could have been because I just didn't empathize with her. Also, it cast me back to the episode where she took June to see Hannah, and June proceeded to scream at Serena through the interior window that she was a monster. However, I do think Serena will play an interesting role in season 3, but maybe in the shadow of the kick-arse Marthas who look like they could be poised to overthrow Gilead. Finally, some questions. Who was in the front of the car with Commander Lawrence?
That was Cora. She was driving. His Martha.
Question 2. Why didn't Serena try to escape with June and the baby?
That's a good question. I almost think Serena's paralyzed by this transition she's going through.
I agree. I think she's had to do everything in very small, no pun intended, baby steps. Everything has been like just a little tiny push forward from the way back position that she put herself in being a wife and Gilead in the first place. And so this was a little bit too far too fast for her. Saying goodbye to the baby was enough. Even though if she had left, she might have been able to... Well, no, I wouldn't say she'd be around the baby anymore because I'm pretty sure June would just be like, okay, you're in Canada now. Bye-bye.
Yeah, this is my baby.
Yep. So question 3. Is Nick going to be an early kill off in season 3? I can't imagine Waterford is going to be stoked with him almost pulling a gun on him.
Commander Waterford might arrange something, but he's going to do it in a way that he himself isn't stained by whatever has taken place in this finale. I think he's going to protect his image, and so Nick may have to live in order for him to do that.
Yeah.
But I think Nick will pay some sort of consequence.
I agree with that. I agree with that assessment. What did Commander Waterford's map he was studying show? Loss of land?
Well, from what I read on the interweb, it's showing areas of varied levels of control. So Gilead has managed to conquer the entire mainland of the United States, but they don't have complete control in all areas. So I'm not sure what color means what. I think they've got pretty good control on the northeastern seaboard area. And then they probably have mild to moderate control in other areas.
Is it like cell phone service? They've got 4 bars in New England and then everywhere right. else it just gets dicey. So the last question that Anna puts forth is, who wrote Nolite te bastardis carborum dorum on June's bedroom wall? Did she really have time to write that before she left, or did someone else write it?
June had to be the one to write it because I don't think Martha knows about it. I don't think Nick knows about it. Commander Waterford didn't do it.
Right.
Did she have time? No, but she did it.
Yeah, we speculated on that in the main body of our coverage of the finale, how that was kind of it was almost silly. I mean, it's meant to kind of get you pumped up for her to leave and run out and be like, oh, Fred's going to see that and be like, what the fuck? And it's going to be awesome.
It was supposed to be the final slap in Fred's face from June, too.
Yeah, yeah. And it emotionally, I think it delivers that. But when you try to dissect it and examine it on a real world level, she had to stop, find some sort of either carving or writing implement in a house that is not full of them outside of his office, Fred's office, and then take the time to do that when, you know, Rita is telling her to get the fuck out on a timeline. So yeah, I could have done without it, but it was there. So yeah, I agree, Anna, with what you were saying about how Serena still being one of the best characters, but if we were to leave, I agree also, I think what you're trying to say and what I'm getting out of what you're saying is that if they had left Serena on a trajectory of going up and up after the scenes where her and June had made a connection, the emotional value of her getting her pinky cut off would have been huge to the audience. But after the rape scene and her reverting back to old Serena, it kind of had less impact because you're just like, well, I already went back to hating her, so now you're really only pulling me back up to zero.
Right, and I think that's natural for us to feel that way about Serena. But when I reflect back on the rape scene and the look on Serena's face, she had a look of horror. It's almost like she had this bird's eye point of view or she was observing herself and she was horrified that she was participating in this. So that, along with everything else we've seen Serena go through, has all been stirred into the pot that has now turned into the Serena we have now.
Following along with your Serena in the pot metaphor, the stew, she's going to be a spicy Serena gumbo that's going to burn the tongue. Hopefully, anyway. Thank you for writing in, Anna.
Yes, thank you, Anna. Okay, up next we have Jen, and Jen says, "Hi, Em and Steve. Thank you both so much for your amazing podcast. I look forward to hearing your voices every week. The finale was truly amazing, but the reason I am writing to you is to let you know, as a mother of two, there is no way in hell, aka Gilead, I would be able to leave either of my children behind if there was even the slightest chance I could find the one left behind. I did go crazy when June said she was going to stay, but then I thought of one of my children being left anywhere, which was not with me, and just the thought of it made my stomach drop. I could never leave either of them behind. I actually feel it would be harder to live knowing you left a child behind than to try absolutely everything you could to get them out. That was all I really wanted to try to say. I am not great at feedback, but this I felt I could write about with good authority. I am sure I will not be the only parent to write in to say the same. Thank you again, and I look forward to hearing you back for season 3. And she writes in again, says, "Hello, me again. I just read this interview with Elizabeth Moss where she explains June's decision to stay in Gilead, and it makes even more sense why she would stay. It makes me very excited about the next season. And she sent us a link, and I have not read it yet. I have no way of commenting on it just now, but I will share this link in our description under our podcast for you guys."
So, Jen, it seems like we're getting a consensus here of parents who are saying that the finale becomes a little bit more digestible for them because they can sympathize with June's motives in this. If they have, you know, you're not going to leave one of your children behind. So, but she does give one of her children away to go. So I wonder, like, but I guess that the assumption is made by everybody who's writing in and saying, defending June's reason for staying, is kind of saying that that child, Holly, Nicole, whatever you want to call her, is going to get away safely somewhere and it's going to be okay. So just like, you just have to believe that. So there's like a certain amount of faith that's going on here, because if she had stayed with her, she could make sure of that, at least to the best of her ability. If they get stopped by guardians at the border, there's nothing they can do about it anyway. But, yes, I'm imagining that this, you know, all of the people who had a problem with the ending, they can find a little bit of solace in this because they might make the same decision too. But just fingers crossed that, like we keep saying, that June can find some sort of agency to affect the change that she wants.
What is she going to do, though, if Emily doesn't get out? Is she going to be spread thin now trying to...
I don't even want to think about that bullshit, because if they do that, that is just going to be double fucked.
It's a given that Emily's getting out, right?
Somebody has to get out at some point, or people are going to stop watching. You know, I think there's going to be a few people who stopped watching just because I'm imagining anyway. I don't know. I haven't read all the feedback, so I don't know if any of the listeners are expressing that sentiment tonight. But I know there's going to be some people out there who are just being like, okay, that's it, I'm done. You know, they keep teasing us with this, and they're just, it's going to be Gilligan's Island. At the end of every season, there's going to be a really quick thing that's supposed to get her out that we didn't know about before, and then it's not going to work. And she's either going to stay because the guardians keep her, or because she wants to, or whatever. So somebody has to leave. So we'll just assume that it's Emily and the baby.
Thank you, Jennifer.
All right. Up next is Sam Spade, a.k.a. the Undefeated Sam.
The Undefeated Sam.
Sam says, "I don't know how to digest this finale. More and more, June's plot armor is stretching thin, but I accepted it for the most part. I know that we can't pull a Ned Stark, so okay, fine." So she slapped the piss out of Commander Fuckboy, and coupled with her previous escapes and outright cussing them out, it feels like she can do no wrong. Don't get me wrong, Commander Fuckboy is about as useful as nipples on a breastplate, and an insecure fuckweasel to boot, so he deserved to get stomped into the dirt. But the same dude whipped his wife, and he let her be mutilated. We did end this episode with a fourth escape opportunity that she aborts with the same look of determination I've seen in several episodes that the following episode almost completely ignores. I don't know what I expected. I just didn't expect her to turn and walk back into the place Rita and the others risked themselves to get her out of. And I ask you, who takes the time to write that on the wall minutes after unexpectedly being told to skedaddle? Yeah. Some friends believe she couldn't leave Hannah, but if her previous near escapes had succeeded, she'd have went to Canada and then had to return to liberate Hannah anyway. While I love the acting of this show, the tropey zoned out / slow walk-in when time is of the essence just seems like something I thought this show was above. Again, I don't know what I expected. Likely the podcast will have set me straight before you get to my feedback. I'm out. I don't know. I think we share some of those misgivings.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you about the slow-mo stuff that drove me crazy. And great point about the look of determination that is no longer acknowledged, you know, in the following episode. It's like, we're back at square one again. The last episode didn't happen. Whatever, you know, thought processes she had and decisions she had made internally is just like it vanishes into thin air. I feel like those are devices. Plot devices that are used. And that is something I agree with you, Sam, that I thought the show was above as well. And I hope that we get a more straightforward storytelling next season that doesn't feel like they need to rely on such things, because the story shouldn't have to rely on that.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, it doesn't have to. It not only it shouldn't have to, it doesn't have to. It's better than that. We've seen it be better than that. So I feel like this is adding something, an element that I agree with you completely when you say that it's above that, you know. And really, they're going for that tension, obviously. But I feel like if the tension brings you to the point of a little bit of anxiety, they've done their job. If it brings you to the point where you're having palpitations, it's gone too far. You know, and they should know when to pull back and when to just get the job done. And you know, so those the slow-mo things over and over when time is of the essence, you're not the only one that got driven up a wall by it. So don't expect anything that we say to make you go, oh, that's how I should look at it. It's great, because I think we feel the same way.
Yeah. Thank you, Sam.
Thanks, Sam. So this is Benny Jessica's PS.
All right, up next, we have a PS from Benny Jessica, and she says, PS, I have listened to your podcast now and have to send a long PS. Sorry about that. I have to defend my girl Serena and her behavior. Serena was a good Christian girl who just wanted a baby. She was educated and religious, don't always go hand in hand, and understood and wanted to solve the infertility problems and at the same time get herself a baby of her own. Gilead was the solution to both the world's problems and her own egoistic needs. She wanted to believe in Gilead. She was willing to give up her career, books, sharing her husband with a handmaid, and later taking the Fred beating all for the end prize, her own baby. Some days she was fine with her sacrifice, but other days she had a hard time to put up with it, hence the bitchiness and lashing out on June. Rita and whoever, baby fever can make you crazy. But when she got a daughter of her own, she could not look the other way anymore on what the world she was a part of creating had become. Eden's execution showed her what Gilead can do to teenage girls, and she has a baby that one day will become a teenage girl in Gilead. Eden's father showed her that in Gilead, fathers turn their own daughters in, and Fred made it clear that he is a man that will not protect Serena nor their daughter. Serena was into Gilead for the kids and to get a baby of her own. Now she sees that Gilead and Fred are all about power, control, and male dominance. Serena is a mother now, and her only concern is to protect her child. Longing for a baby can fuck you up, and becoming a mother will definitely fuck you up. You live the rest of your life in fear of that something, and I mean anything from falling off a swing, having mean friends, heartbreak, to kidnapping, car accidents, illness, etc., etc., will happen to this piece of you that roams around the world out of your control. I agree that it felt a bit odd that all of the wives suddenly jumped on Serena's train, but many of them are mothers too, and maybe they also felt worried for their kids as for themselves. All of the women are starting to feel oppressed. Knitting is just not that fulfilling. And okay, so I wanted June to get out of Gilead too, but now I think it's better that she is there, whether she goes underground to fight or if she does it from the water herds. She needs to be there. What would she have done in Canada? Moped around with Luke and made Fruit Loop jokes? Think about it. If she had got out, she would have needed to get in again to get Hannah and to fight. How do you see the story playing out if she had got out? Would it have been better? Nah. Not when you really think about it. So everybody chill out. The writers / June made the right decision. Okay, now I'm done. Thank you so much again, Jess. Yeah, I really like what you brought up, especially about Fred, how he's made it clear to Serena that he will not protect her nor their daughter. Because she was sitting next to Fred as he was not backing down on his anger towards Eden, even after her death and in the presence of her father. He was instrumental in Serena getting her finger cut off. So there's been this arc that we've seen with Fred, because we've also had the benefit of seeing the flashbacks between Fred and Serena, where he was her right-hand man. He was her supporter. He's the one that was kind of her aide. You know, she was the leader in that relationship. So he's been twisted and shaped, but also that thing inside him helped drive this too, right? So we can't just act like he's a victim of Gilead, because he's definitely instrumental in what Gilead is.
Yeah, and he gets to benefit from that, like way out of proportion to what she gets to benefit, even if she was to keep a child and raise it as her own.
I guess, is it some sort of feedback loop?
Feedback fruit loop?
Yeah. Thank you, Benny Jessica.
Yeah, thank you very much. All right. So up next, we give a season 2 finale salute to the general, Dahlia.
Swish.
Hi, Em and Steve. What a season ender. I'll just jump right in with my thoughts. Number 1, I did not see that coming with Aunt Lydia. Booyah! 2, here's my theory on Commander Lawrence. I think he was an intellectual professor in a liberal university who was an anthropologist, or perhaps a historian, or a writer, a Philip Roth type, who proposed the idea of a society like Gilead. He never really intended for it to become real. He was just theorizing about what could be. The leaders of Gilead were familiar with his work, liked the framework, and radicalized it, putting him up on a pedestal for being its architect and assigning him a high rank in the society. He probably at first didn't mind the adoration, but didn't think that any of it would truly come to pass. Once he saw what reality was, he was already stuck in Gilead, although I would still think at some point he should have been able to get across the border. And since, quote, privacy was valued in his house, he thought that he could live out the rest of his days in relative luxury, secrecy, and privilege as long as he was willing to look the other way. I never said he was completely moral. He succeeded. His wife did not.
I can buy a lot of that.
That sounds plausible with all the available information. Good job. 3, like most, I was disappointed that June did not take the chance to leave Gilead. I am not a parent, but I saw that she was faced with a Sophie's Choice type of situation. I was glad to see her mother's activism be ignited in June. I think she always had it in her, but it had just not been activated until now. She can do so much more on the inside than she can away from Gilead. 4, I still don't understand how Serena could have ever agreed to be part of Gilead. She's too smart. And the promise of a child, while appealing, would probably never provide her with total fulfillment or be enough of an incentive to give up reading, writing, and normal life. I'm even pretty sure that she could have anticipated the slippery slope that might happen if things spiraled out of control, so her surprise at certain things still seems like a major plot hole to me. Ah, well, it's easy to sit back on my couch and provide commentary, right? Still not sure what I want to see happen in season 3, but I look forward to what other no-shippers say. Don't let the bastards grind you down. Cheers, Dahlia General.
No, but you're making great points about Serena. It does seem crazy that she wouldn't see it, but then it also seems even crazier that it would take so much for her to come around. But it's nice to have you following Benny Jessica, who is taking up for Serena, and to have a counterpoint here.
Yeah, I agree. I like the differing viewpoints. I probably tend to agree more with this viewpoint that Serena she was smart enough to know what was coming. And I'm not obviously a mother or a parent at all, so I don't understand baby craziness. And so I understand that that's a factor too, and that can weigh in just as heavily. But from an audience's viewpoint, from the couch, you know, from us on the couch next to Dahlia General watching the show, I'm kind of thinking along the same lines. Like, they made her character intelligent enough to where you think that she would have seen some of these pitfalls come through.
Right. She's well read. She should be able to discern the red flags, mm-hmm. you know, based on things that she's encountered in her reading.
Yeah. And, you know, if you wanted a baby that bad, you could have just adopted. Just saying.
Well, I imagine that it's hard to adopt when there's such high infertility that the competition to adopt is so great.
That's true. Yeah. I guess you have to just keep living
captive.
You have
to steal babies is what you have to do. So you form Gilead so you can steal babies.
Thank you, Dahlia.
Thank you, Dahlia. This next piece of feedback is from John, and John says, "Hi, guys. Thanks so much for all the fantastic discussion on Season 2. Overall, I think Season 2 was better than Season 1. It was more intense, had great action, and the reveals about Gilead geopolitics were fascinating. I think they did a great job expanding beyond the book. I know the last scene of the finale disappointed lots of people, but I am okay with it. I think June's actions make a lot of sense. Here is how I rationalize June's decision to stay. For the whole of the 2 seasons, she tried many subtle ways to push back against the Waterford and Gilead's control. Every time, her efforts were rebuffed. We saw time and time again her little wins were quickly quashed and followed by devastating defeats. That culminated this season in episode 4 when she finally hit rock bottom, appeared to give up fighting, and became fully indoctrinated with the Offred persona. But then, over the remainder of the season, she managed to regain her June-ness and her strength. How did she pull herself together? Lots of terrible, horrifying things happened in the second half of season two, but if you put all the positive things together, you can see how they helped lift June up. The bombing of Gilead, Serena asking her to do the editing and getting that nasty commander arrested, Emily and Janine returning, and the handmaids bonding, June helping Janine with the Putnam sick baby, Nick returning from Canada with news of Luke and Moira, reuniting with Hannah, the birth of Holly, and then being allowed to nurse her. After all that, June found the courage and strength to do the things she had always wanted to do. She told Fred to go fuck himself. She punched him in the face, and she finally managed to get Serena to recognize how messed up Gilead was and convinced her to give up the baby. And she did each of those things without any punishment, censure, or negative consequence. Finally, after all of those years of defeat, she finds herself in a position where she can do and say what she always wanted to do to Serena and Fred. And they are so messed up, they cannot do anything about it. Finding herself in that position, I can understand why she would think, well, I have finally managed to overcome the Waterfords. Maybe I can also achieve my other goal, which is to get Hannah. I think that if a parent saw even the smallest glimmer of hope that they could save their child from living in hell, they would take that chance to save them. Everything June did and saw in that finale episode, including seeing Commander Lawrence actually help Emily escape and seeing the Martha swing into action, would have given her more than a glimmer of hope that she had not that she had a shot at saving Hannah. I agree with you guys that if she hadn't seen Emily in that truck at the end and been able to give Holly to her, then I don't think she would have stayed. So yeah, I can totally understand her choosing to stay. It is an incredibly brave decision, but one that I think plenty of other parents would make if they thought they had a chance to save their child. As for season 3 predictions, it would be pretty satisfying if Aunt Lydia was dead, but this show seems to be unable to kill off key characters, so I'm sure she will be hanging around. If so, I hope we get more of her backstory. I don't think June will end up back at the Waterfords, but I cannot really see how she can just sort of roam the streets for more than 10 seconds without being caught. Maybe she will set up a resistance headquarters in the Boston Globe building, or maybe she will head out west and join up with some of the resistant movements which are apparently going on out there. I'm sure we will see more of Commander Lawrence, and I would not be surprised if he was gay. The way he said to Emily, "I am not doing that with you," the night of the ceremony, made it sound like having sex with a woman is not his thing. Might also explain why he seems to have not bought into the Gilead way of doing things. I gotta say, as a huge West Wing fan, it was great to see Elizabeth Moss and Bradley Whitford share the screen again at the end of the finale. That was a nice touch. Looking forward to your reviews of season 3. Thanks for the awesome podcast. I think you have so far put forth the best support for June's decision in this finale. I really appreciate your letter. Thank you so much, John, for writing that in.
I agree completely. That, like, when you put all of those reasons together, everything just starts to kind of form up, and it's like, okay, now it makes sense, especially when you hit on the fact that she just saw the underground Martha Railroad in action, and then she saw what Commander Lawrence was doing, and it's just like, if I can scrap together just the barest, like, way, plan or something, there's, it gives her that glimmer of hope, like, you and some of the other feedbackers have been saying, so. Slowly tonight, as my feelings of disappointment don't go away, but now they're kind of being tamed a little bit. Like, okay, now it's making more sense. This is what's so good about being part of a community like this, is because when you don't quite lock into something, other people explain it for you.
I actually interpreted Commander Lawrence's statement of, "I'm not doing that with you," differently. That referring to rape, where he's got a distaste for it. And then you being Emily, I think he realizes she's out to kill. He's putting two and two together, or he's figured Emily out.
Yeah, at least to the level that he knows that she's dangerous. And he's like, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. You got to be crazy. See, the part where you say, I don't think June will end up back at the Waterfords, but you can't really see how she can just sort of roam the streets for more than 10 seconds without being caught. That's the part that gets me. I feel like it's crossed my mind that we could possibly have a time jump at the beginning of season 3 and have her already be part of some sort of resistance cell, and when we open up, it'll be with characters we've never met before, and she's going on some sort of recon mission and things like that, and you know, she's toting a gun, like you almost turn her from Offred into Linda Hamilton in Terminator 2 type thing.
Maybe Jezebels will figure into that somehow, where that's going to be a way where information's passed, information is gathered via connections through Jezebels.
Huh.
Because it's almost like a nexus point where you got commanders mingling with people they shouldn't be, revealing secrets because they're drinking And those women at Jezebel's, relatively speaking, have a little bit more freedom.
Yeah. You know, and like you said, drinking and drugs and loose lips sink ships. So, you know, people start getting, you know, loose and happy and start saying stuff that they shouldn't to the wrong people, and that gets remembered. So, yeah, that works perfectly. That kind of stuff I can totally buy into. If she ends up back in the red at somebody's house, obviously probably not the Waterfords, because that would be just too much of a retread for anybody to swallow. Or at least I feel like it would be at this point.
Maybe she will end up at Commander Lawrence's house and they're going to, you know, go to Jezebel's together pretending to be a couple just so they can do whatever they need to do.
That would totally be on the right page, because something different has to happen. She didn't get out, so something different has to happen. And, you know, when people keep posing the question of, well, how would this have worked if she went to Canada, if she did escape? I don't know. And it does seem to be a limiting factor on the story if you do that. But the writers have been so good at getting you to places where you didn't think you wanted to go that I don't have a doubt that they would have made that situation work. And I really don't have a doubt that they're going to make this situation work. I just always feel a little bit wary when I feel like they're writing themselves into a corner. But what do I know?
All right, next up we have Andrew. And Andrew says, hey, Em and Steve. First off, just wanted to say it's been nice to listen to your podcast all season. I usually don't write in feedback because I watch a little later in the week with my wife, whose name is also Sarah, by the way. I will try and make my feedback quick since you and all the other listeners usually do a great job with directing the discussion. Like you, and I am sure a lot of people, I was upset with the ending of the season finale, not understanding why June would stay when she has been trying for two seasons to get out of Gilead. I still feel bad for Nick, Rita, and all the other Marthas for risking so much to get her out, only to have her turn around and stay. My feelings won't be fully shaped until the opening of next season and how they handle it. I do understand the decision from a storytelling perspective, though. We need someone in Gilead we truly care about, and although there still could have been Emily and Nick, but they don't carry the same weight. Also, if she were to get to Canada, what is she going to do differently than Luke and Moira in order to take out Gilead? I can't think of anything, and while it would be an emotional reunion, I personally don't need to see her tread water in Canada next season. I think June can take Gilead down from the inside a lot easier. I know Commander Lawrence is a possibility, but what if she could go back to the Waterford house and somehow, with Mrs. Waterford, Nick, and Rita, take control of that house and hold Fred hostage, or start a rebellion from there? I think next season will move quickly to start. I don't think June can find anywhere to hide immediately. Anyways, I really enjoy the show and the podcast. Thanks for all the coverage.
I like that idea of her being like in league with all of these other people and starting holding him hostage or starting a revolution. I mean, that's one of the things that I never even thought about, something along those lines. You know, after you had told me that there was that discussion about them, the show could go on for 10 seasons if it's successful enough or something like that. At some point, I think that they would just kind of switch their focus. And so this just occurred to me as I was listening to you read Andrew's letter, that maybe in the future, you know, June could escape to Canada. And then from there, she wouldn't be the main character anymore. She would just be an auxiliary character and they could focus on somebody else, because it's called The Handmaid's Tale. It's not June's Tale or Offred's Tale. So it could shift focus to another one. And as long as you weren't retreading the same themes too closely and you move the whole story forward, you could get some mileage out of that too. But I don't know. So does Elizabeth Moss have to be around and or alive for the rest of it for this show to succeed? Is it intrinsically linked with her? You know, if they didn't survive this little rebellion that they started and things went from there, then, you know, or they escaped and, you know, with Hannah, and then we could have like parallel stories going on, because I mean, we still have Alma and Janine, and if Aunt Lydia is still around, I mean, you know, and Fred and Serena are always going to be an interesting story to follow regardless of who else is around them. So,
well, I mean, I agree with you that if they are going to go on for 10 seasons, it's going to have to be something like that, but that it doesn't interest me to see the trials and tribulations of another handmaid. I just hope they just do right by the story and they're not just trying to milk it in the long run.
Agreed. Yeah. Starting over would feel like being held back in school, like having to do ninth grade over again, being like, oh man, again. Anyway.
Andrew, I also like what you said about how you really can't form your true opinion about the events of the final moments of the finale until you see season 3. And I agree with you. There's a part of me that feels the same way. I just didn't realize it until you put it into words.
Thank you, Andrew, for writing in.
Yes, thank you, Andrew.
And tell Sarah that she is an honorary member of the Sarah's Club, whether she wants to be or not.
I think we need to check with the captain about that.
Well, I mean, don't all Sarahs get immediate acceptance if they're Handmaid's Tale fans? No, I guess I'm assuming that she is. I don't know that she is. She didn't write, so I don't know. All right, so up next is Kat. She says, "Hi, Em and Steve. So, that happened. You know, I didn't hate the finale, but I didn't love it either. The reoccurring theme for me for the last half of the season was walking away from each episode, with the exception of episode 9, which was one of my favorites, feeling like I wanted to like it more than I did, and I felt the same way with the finale. I actually thought it was somewhat anticlimactic despite some tense moments. There were several moments that seemed off to me. The best review that I've read so far regarding the finale was by NPR. I agreed with many of their viewpoints. My only hope was that the baby would get out, so for that I am glad. Not happy about the name change, but more on that later. Referencing the title of the episode, The Word, we have the opening scene with June listing various words describing women, Serena reading the Bible, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. June whispering those three little words to Nick, June's parting words to Fred scratched into the wall. June and Rita at the clothesline was a really beautiful shot, but I was distracted by the amount of laundry. Did Eden wash every piece of clothing she owned before running away? June literally has one outfit to her name plus a cloak. Maybe it's just a perk of being an econo-wife. I like June and Rita bonding over Eden's death, but I felt like June's comment about sleeping with Eden's husband to be out of place and just really weird. I haven't gone back to rewatch earlier episodes, but I'm pretty sure Nick and June weren't banging each other when he was officially married. I wasn't sure if this was June's attempt at trying to make Rita feel better about treating Eden like shit or what."
That's what I thought.
I thought so too. Yeah, she didn't actually sleep with him when they were married. June discovering Eden's Bible and the revelation that she was secretly reading and writing. I mean, sure, why not? I wish we'd have gotten a hint of this from her character because it seems like it was really out of the blue. It would have made her more interesting, that's for sure. Wonder if Isaac would have been so eager to run off with her if he had known what she was up to. I was about ready to throw my TV out of the window with the possibility of yet another flip-flop with Serena as she appeared to have forgotten how heartbroken she was about Eden's death. Eden's family turned her in. Not surprising. Calling June Nick's girlfriend seemed odd, especially since they're supposed to be mourning Eden. Now, I'm usually ride or die for happy Nick and June scenes, but even this moment didn't have the impact that it should have had for me. I think part of the problem was that it seemed really short, and I would have liked a little bit more time watching these two finally come together as a family. Maybe just an extra 30 seconds or so. It just felt like it was cut short, especially when I think about all the time that was wasted later on during June's slow getaway. The other thing I noticed was the sound. Maybe it was my TV, but I couldn't hear much of what was being said. Thank God for closed captions. It was an adorable scene, though, and short as it was, and I'm assuming it served as the extra push Rita needed to help get June and Holly out. I think we all knew Emily was a ticking time bomb. We just didn't know who she was going to take out next. It makes sense it would be Aunt Lydia because it does feel like she genuinely hated Emily. Surely June has proven to be just as difficult as Emily. I guess her hatred towards Emily has something to do with being a lesbian since she offhandedly called her a degenerate. In reality, the combination of being stabbed, falling down the stairs, and getting kicked should be the nail in Aunt Lydia's coffin, but we all know the rule. If we don't get confirmation that she's dead on screen, she ain't dead. Now here's the part that I'm still confused about. Cora yells for Commander Lawrence to call an ambulance. Cora locks Emily in her room. Wouldn't it be highly suspicious to the paramedics that an aunt was brutally attacked? Wouldn't that house be swarming with guardians? How is the house not searched? Even if Commander Lawrence saw Emily ran away, they would search the house properly first, right? How was Emily able to just hang out in her room for what seemed like hours?
They might not have called that ambulance.
That's what I'm thinking. I think that was part of, like, for show. They had to deal with the situation, so we really don't know if she's dead or not. Mm-hmm. They could have finished her off and buried her under the cellar, you know. It's not like she had a GPS locator on her or anything. So Kat goes on to say, "I don't understand why Serena thought her plan would work. She and Fred basically hate each other now, so it doesn't really make sense to me that she would look to him for any kind of support in this situation. Did all the wives just now realize that Gilead wasn't the best place for their daughters to grow up? Having no rights or the ability to read didn't tip them off to that fact? It took Serena and Mrs. Putnam to bring this to their attention? How does allowing girls to read change the circumstances or future in Gilead? I still can't find it in me to feel sorry for Serena, and come on, it was only half a pinky. Others have suffered much worse. I was hoping for her pinky I was hoping her pinky stub was in the bag and Jude would flaunt it in her face, maybe string it up on a necklace and wear it in front of her, like I would have done, but apparently June is a much better person than I am. Instead, she tries to comfort her for reasons that are beyond my comprehension. This is the woman who beat her, held her down so her husband could rape her, and then stole her baby. Did June forget this? Is this June forgiving her? Because I just don't get the sympathy. She's just as evil as Fred, and June shows much more hatred towards him. Hopefully, this is the last scene we get of June and Fred in the kitchen. I thought everyone was on the same page with Fred being sterile, but apparently Fred didn't get the memo. Better suit up, Nick. Time to try for a boy. So, all I have to say with that right there is that I think that June realizes that the horrendous actions of Gilead are bigger than her concerns about Serena, because it encompasses everybody, her child that she just had, and Hannah included. And so that overshadows any anger that she would have at her individually. So the house fire, how many were there? I thought there was only one and a car fire, but someone took a screenshot of a scene in the episode where it looked like there were multiple houses on fire. Were there more than one person? Was there more than one person the Marthas were trying to get out? Did they burn down their own houses, or were they empty? Either way, there has to be some serious repercussions from this. Likewise, Nick and Rita better get their story straight, because things are not looking good for them. I think Nick might have it a little worse since he physically put hands on Fred and not so subtly made moves for his gun. Rita only gave Fred the stink eye, and I think she might be able to explain that away a little easier. The message on the wall was not my favorite thing. June really needs to work on her sense of urgency. I think I read somewhere that June used the key from the jewelry box to scratch the words into the wall. There is really no way she can go back to the house after doing that. Okay, so that's the first thing that I've heard about that. And that kind of sounds plausible. As for how she did it, why she did it, and that time crunch is still beyond me.
It doesn't make it any better.
No.
I mean, good, she used the key.
It's like, you know, okay, now you know how she did it, but you're still not cool with why she did it. Kat goes on to say, I was wondering why Rita didn't bother to make sure Serena wasn't in the greenhouse so June could make a clean escape. Seems like that should have been on the checklist. Rita takes care of Serena, Nick takes care of Fred. Instead, we see June sprint out in front of the greenhouse and is actually surprised when she is caught. Note to June, next time, crawl on your hands and knees, carry the baby in your mouth if you have to, and do a belly crawl. Do not run directly in front of the open window in bright red and not expect to get caught. I think at this point I was yelling for June to kick Serena in the shins and get to that Martha. June, do not hand Holly over to Serena. June, don't do it. Sigh. I mean, really, this should be common sense, to not hand over your baby to the woman who stole her from you. I get it. Serena had to say the longest goodbye ever and make her peace with letting Holly go while the rest of us lose our shit screaming at June to hurry up. Seriously, though, TikTok. The Underground Martha Railroad was amazing. Hopefully we'll find out more about it next season. Did it already exist? Is this something different from the female Underground Railroad? Have they smuggled people out before? Did June just ruin it for everybody? I can't help but think Rita is going to be pissed. She risked so much to get June and the baby out, only to find out June stayed behind by choice. Although her choice is understandable, maybe she won't stay mad for too long.
Yeah, June's going to become notorious among all these underground groups because Mayday, you know, went quiet after the events of season one because of her.
the subtitle for season three is The Handmaid's Tale, Burned Bridges. No one's going to deal with you. I don't really have a strong opinion either way whether June should have escaped or stayed. I have read many reviews and comments on why she should have done one or the other. I actually didn't expect June to get out this season, so when I saw her pull out the picture of Hannah, I knew right then she was going to stay. I was surprised June wasn't more emotional letting Holly go. I justified it with the fact that she was handing Holly over to someone she trusted, but I couldn't help but think back to how brutal her goodbye was with Hannah and how this in comparison was nowhere near as emotional as that scene was. Now to the part I hated most, the name change. I said in my last feedback that I refused to call Holly Nicole, and I'm sticking to that. This part made no sense to me. We just had an entire episode called Holly, mind you, where we see June remembering moments with her mother. These memories were so important to her, her mother was so important to her, that she decided to name her daughter after her. Then, in the very next episode, we see June tell Nick she wants to name the baby Holly after her mother. Cut to this episode where Serena gives June her daughter back so she can escape, and June thinks this act is deserving of changing her daughter's name to the one her abuser/rapist gave her instead. What? Why? Serena literally did the least she could do in that moment. The name Holly should have meant so much more to June than anything related to Serena. Elizabeth Moss was asked about this, and she said something to the effect that it was, quote, a show of love for Serena and a thank you for what she did. Screw that mess. It's Holly, June. I'll compromise with Nicali if I have to. Loose end. No resolution or follow-up to why Nick asked Commander Pierce to be reassigned. What was the intention here? I never did see any explanation that made any sense regarding this request.
I think he was freaking out about the whole Eden situation.
Yeah, that sounds plausible, but you're right. We didn't get anything tangible about it, but I agree with that. Two, what happened to Commander Cushing? I thought he would resurface. I thought he made a good villain and an even better enemy to Fred. Yep, that one got swept under the carpet as we were fearing that it would, but they occupied our minds with enough stuff for the rest of the season to where we kind of let it go, I think.
Yeah, we should have at least seen a trial.
Yeah, maybe we still will, though. Maybe we still will. Who is in charge of the eyes now that Price is gone? Anyone? Are the eyes still functioning in the same capacity? That's a good question. I tend to believe that those kinds of organizations inside totalitarian societies, I think they actually get stronger and nastier and more reach every time a leader dies and a new one takes over. That seems to be the historical precedent that's been set. So I guess we'll have to be on the lookout for that. No repercussions for the Waterfords for raping June. Looks like they just got away with it. No fallout in Gilead over the Handmaid's letters being released. Seems weird that there wasn't even a hint at finding out who had the letters. Yeah, that's a good point to make, because Fred even says, the very character even says, I'm never going to hear the end of this, and then we never hear anything of it.
He had to realize that the letters came with his group of people who went up into Canada, so why wasn't he launching an investigation into that?
Yeah, that seems like a really loose end that's not getting tied up anytime soon. Kat goes on to say, no real mention of the bombing at the Rachel and Leah Center beyond episode 6. I am really confused why this wasn't a bigger deal. This should have been huge. So far as I can tell, that really just served to give us Isaac and also provide a sort of an in with the Canadians. Plus, it was a really cool episode. It was a really neat scene. But
it's buried under so much other stuff. Sometimes I forget it happened.
Yeah, it didn't have time to breathe on its own and really like be its own thing. So Kat goes on to say, season 3, I have no idea. It's pretty much an open book on where they will go with the storyline. What we do know is that we'll see more of the resistance and a plan to get Hannah out. I'm hoping there isn't a time jump, because I will be upset if they don't show us how June gets out of this mess. No one wants to see her back at the Waterfords, but I'm hoping she doesn't just appear on Commander Lawrence's doorstep and he takes her in. I have no idea where she can realistically go, if not one of those two places, unless Nick hides her under his bed. There will be consequences for Nick and Rita, but they'll live. Aunt Lydia will live and be extra nasty, as she'll feel she's been too lenient with her handmaids. Ooh.
Yeah.
Not sure where Nick and June's relationship goes from this point, but I'm sure he'll be instrumental in helping her get Hannah out. June has to get out next season if her whole reason for staying is to get Hannah and run. My pet theory is regarding Holly. I keep thinking about how Nick will probably never see her again. Then I thought, once it becomes known that Emily escaped with her, Fred will take measures to try and get her back. Serena will flip-flop again because she'll feel betrayed that June handed the baby over to someone else to raise. Emily has no legal right to the child since it is not biologically hers, and the Waterfords will be seen as the rightful parents because there is no way to prove she isn't biologically theirs either. Canada will have to carefully weigh their options, but may not have the law on their side to keep the baby in the country. Maybe Nick will end up in Canada either through escaping or tagging along with the Waterfords, and it's proven he's the biological parent to Holly, which keeps her from being sent back to Gilead, which with the Waterfords. This sets up an interesting confrontation dynamic with Luke and Moira as Nick is introduced to them and as the real father of June's baby. Maybe they build a shaky alliance to help June and Hannah escape. It's a long shot, but if you would have told me June would have 3 escape attempts in one season, I would have thought that was a long shot too. It's been a long 13 episodes. I'm going into season 3 with lowered expectations after this season, but I'll be back to watch how this plays out. Until next year, Kat.
Yeah, I like how you extrapolated further as far as what would happen with Nicole in Canada and having Nick more instrumental in that. And I like that idea. I do agree it is a long shot, but it's interesting.
It's just as plausible as anything else that I can think of. Because I'm racking my brain as far as where the story's going to go. And I know you're saying that you don't want to see, Kat, you don't want to see a time jump. But I would actually like to see one. And then you can show us the genesis of how June got to where she is through a series of flashbacks a couple of episodes in. I just want to know that she's safe, finally.
Thank you, Kat.
Thank you, Kat.
All right, up next we have Sarah Powers, aka Dr. Deez, and she says, "Hey, no shippers. Regarding the conclusion, as an editor, I believe there are better ways to build 13 hours of TV towards this conclusion. Piecing together small rebellions as evidence of a larger one versus dropping three functioning rebellions into the finale. Trouble is, they lose the not great writing elements of 1. Endless torture of women / viewers. 2. Surprise. Don't try to tell me June made that decision before she was hiding in the bulrushes with baby Moses. When she decided, she got so antsy that I'm surprised she didn't punt that poor future propaganda baby into the van for 40 yards screaming, 'Call her Nicole!' The writers themselves have taught us that June's murder face never produces narrative progress, but rather savage punishments for everyone within a 5-mile radius and reinstatement of the status quo. So I don't have much faith in Darth Junius." Season 3 theory. All the evidence, and she's got evidence in quotation, of a larger rebellion is from this single episode. So she's bound to be wrong about at least one element, and I'm betting it's Lawrence. My theory is he's an intellectually amused fence sitter, willing to entertain both sides, a foil more than a true ally. Josh Lyman was not always the good guy. And Josh Lyman, by the way, is his character in The West Wing. And I know this because I've been watching it. Sarah goes on to say, series direction. At first, I was excited because it seemed that The Handmaid's Tale was telling a new story about women's capabilities. As a reader, I assumed June's story would be limited with the other seasons, more anthology-based. This would have provided a cycle of relief, bitter victory, and changing perspectives as Gilead torturously grinds itself into animal feed, but it seems determined to stay excruciatingly focused on these few women until there is nothing left, and I feel as dull and discouraged about this as I do about politics. Giving our bodies and lives for our children is actually the oldest story. Still, regarded as the purest romantic form of female heroism, and in the limitations of this non-book world, even the most revolutionary measures undertaken by women depend on men in some way. So I was not thrilled to read that instead of anthologizing Gilead, Bruce Miller plans to ride June's tale for up to 10 seasons, acting as though anything else would have been crazy talk and we all should have known. Sure, progressively cutting body parts off Elizabeth Moss and Yvonne Strahovski will get you all the Emmys, and we should just absorb these 130 hours of unrelenting stress. That's not what I wanted out of The Handmaid's Tale, so unless something drastically changes about this narrative or this country, I might be done. It's not that I don't get it. I totally do. I just don't want it. And she signs off, Dr. Deez.
As always, when Sarah makes an argument like that, I find it very difficult to find a counterpoint to it. And it's probably because I agree with what she's saying. Even when I don't, sometimes it's just like, oh, I was great at devil's advocate. But the anthology point that you bring up would have been great. And that, like, that's kind of what I was saying earlier, a little bit like it, to where you could focus on other people. But, you know, like you said, they're focusing on these certain few women and just grinding them to dust. And at a certain point, you do risk losing your audience. And it looks like Sarah might be out if they don't kind of shape up, so to speak. And, you know, I think I don't want to paint audiences as simplistic, but you have to give people a win or they don't come back to watch the spectacle. Nobody would have watched Spartacus if he lost every single match ever. It just wouldn't have been compelling, you know? So there's, and you can put up the whole thing about reality, but reality gets so dire as it is that all we have to do is watch the news if we want to feel emotionally beaten down. We just have to look at who's president, and we just have to look at the reasons for why the hashtag MeToo movement is even around. And then we can feel plenty of that direness. We don't need it in fiction. We don't need to escape to that area. So we got to get that win. And Holly/Nicole getting out wasn't enough for me to feel that win. But I feel like the other writers feedbacking tonight have kind of given me a well-reasoned and thought out argument for why we, you know, there's hope. Or even if there's not hope, there's at least a good reason why she did it.
Right. Justification for her reasons.
Yeah.
But I also like, Sarah, that you wrote in expressing the frustration that a lot of people have had with this season and especially with this finale. And I think you just summed it up in a nutshell how I felt at the moment that I watched this episode for the first time. like yourself, I'm cynical about the 10 seasons, and it's hard to imagine that there's enough of this story, as we have seen already, that could actually carry through. That would be compelling for me to continue. Sarah, I also buy your assessment of Commander Lawrence, along with Dahlia's. Yours is a different take, and he's probably, if he is as you think he is, he's going to be a very frustrating character, and probably not unlike Serena, just from a different vantage point. He'll be flip-floppy.
I like the point that you bring up about how when you say giving our bodies, speaking about women, giving our bodies and lives for our children is actually the oldest story, still regarded as the purest romantic form of female heroism. And in the limitations of this non-book world, even the most revolutionary measures undertaken by women depending on men in some way. So there's an expected action by females to fulfill the heroine archetype, and then they also need to be helped by males. So it could be seen from the way that Sarah's putting it out there, that what looked like finally June being able to grab some sort of agency was really just her fulfilling some sort of archetype.
Yeah.
And personally, it's not so much about the question of what the hell would she do in Canada? Would she be with the rest of the people who are impotent against this problem, sitting around with June and Moira eating making the Fruit Loop jokes? But like that wouldn't be the problem in this scenario. It would just be the fact that could be overlooked, because we could say June finally made a decision to say, fuck this, I'm doing something for myself. I'm taking me and my newborn baby and I'm getting the fuck out of this madhouse, this hell, and I'm gone. And yeah, so you're not sacrificing yourself for your child, but I mean, parents can, you know, give us the other side of that. And I appreciate it too, because I'm not a parent, but I see it this way as well. So, but hopefully, Sarah, that you at least give season 3 a chance, because...
Just because we want your feedback.
Yeah, we just need your feedback. This isn't, you know, we don't care if you enjoy it. We just need your feedback. Just, okay, well, let's make a deal. We're all here through season 3, but if you start season 4 and you hate it, just hate watch it and still give us your feedback. That way, at least we have entertainment value. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, she doesn't want to.
I'm totally kidding. This is
experience it.
This is a harsh show to put yourself through. And watching it, you know, season after season, and not having anything change, and seeing Gilead fall, and or not fast enough or anything, it's going to take its toll, and people are just going to be, you know what? I feel like I need a Xanax after every episode, and I've got like the coffee jitters just from watching a television show. You're going to get diminishing returns on that if you don't get some wins out of it. That's all. Thank you, Sarah.
Yes, thank you, Sarah.
All right. And last but certainly not least, we have Bibb's feedback for the finale of season 2. She says, well, I'm here, but none too happy about it. Just need it to be over. Life is hard enough, and this isn't exactly escapist fare. Struggling to find anything that is at the moment. I don't want to subjugate anyone, but I sure wish someone else would do my laundry. Oh, look, women feeling guilty over a woman they had no hope of helping, trapped just like them. I don't think you should look to Serena Joy for guidance, June. Yeah, see? Limited compassion. Good point. How do you understand something if you can't read it? If I were June, my head would have exploded months ago. From the look on June's forehead, I think her brain is trying to escape her skull. Fred Waterford is a shit, and so is Eden's father. You know, I think Eden's father is a bigger shit because he's a cowardly shit.
Yeah.
Not that Fred is particularly brave. He's a coward in his own way. But this is just spineless.
Sucking up.
Obsequious bullshit. Ugh. Ha 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 ha. I enjoyed the hell out of that. Do it again, June. Wear that broken hand with pride. What did I just say to you two? Quit lurking in doorways. You aren't building tension. You're just stupid. Old One Eye is hilarious. Angela should be gaining pounds, not ounces. What is wrong with these people? Aunt Lydia, does Emily's ceremony include pot and rock and roll? Because any drugs will help this situation. A weapon. She has a weapon. For what purpose? Someone is going to miss that knife. Oh, women in blue dresses. This is not going to end well. Your fragile men cannot handle your idea. We appreciate your interest in our work. Fuck you. Oh, crap. So much for being a helpmate. Ooh, Bradley lied to Aunt Lydia. Keep it up. Oh, can it, Aunt Lydia. Fuck yeah. Best go finish the job, you badass. Kicking her M.O. Damn it, Emily. She's still alive. I don't mean to be a violent person, but I still wish there was some kicks to the face. What the hell did they do to Serena? Oh yeah, fingers. Honestly, I thought he was going to get rid of her altogether.
Ooh.
An obedient woman. June, clock him with the teapot. I'm begging you. How is anyone still sane at this point? Martha Power. Oh man, if Rita ends up dead, I am done. You hear me? Fred, you should have stayed in your man cave, drinking. Oh, for fuck's sake, why is she lurking in the hothouse? Anyone else having a small stroke at this point? I can't breathe. Yeah, I felt the same way. It was just like, come on.
It was stressful.
Gotta laugh if that's Bradley's car. 2-for-1 handmaids. Called it. Wake up, June. Get in the damn truck. Fuck slow-mo. Oh, for Christ's sakes. Are we on a hero's journey or not? Fucking hell. Well, at least that's over. I'm exhausted. Bib. Oh, so that does it with everybody's feedback for the night. Thank you, everybody, for being with us all season long and writing in. Your feedback has been indispensable to the podcast. It really helps us flesh everything out, no pun intended, and get where we need to be with thinking about everything.
Thank you for writing in. It's no small task to sit down and write a letter with your analysis of an episode, and I know how much effort it takes, and we really appreciate you guys doing that. We hope you come back again for season 3 and participate in our podcast.
All right, so until next season, I am your host Steve,
and I am your host Em.
Don't let the bastards
grind you down.